From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. Super excited today to be sharing the story of an up-and-coming entrepreneur here at the Growth Factory and the Mark Haney Show. We are all about building the backyard advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs, and it's all around this culture of love. And I had heard about Chef Gina, how do you spell your last, say your last name?
Pekka.
Pekka.
Yeah.
Gina Pekka. I had heard about you from Monique Brown, the co-founder of the Growth Factory, my partner in crime. And she raved about how you had come and spoken to a group of entrepreneurs and said, Mark, you got to get the chef on the show. And so here we are. Thank you. And so we're going to dive into a little bit of your origin story, if you don't mind. Maybe we can start with, how did you become an entrepreneur? You're a young woman. It's probably rude for me to ask how old you are, but you're highly successful for such a young person.
Yeah, 28. But for some reason, I feel like way too old and way too young at the same time. It's a conflicting feeling. But I actually, it's been my forever dream to be a chef. 7 years old, asking Santa for a kitchen under the Christmas tree. I had my first menus written. So I knew from a really young age, which I don't think a lot of people get that opportunity to just know and put everything kind of in one basket and say, that's what I'm going to do. But from a really young age, I knew. I didn't know all the other things that would go with it. I knew I just wanted to cook and I loved food and I loved seeing people eat. But then my competitive spirit was a huge piece of kind of who I was. And I realized culinary is like a huge competitive battlefield that you can kind of go into. And so that was really enticing to me. And then...
You wanted the battle. Oh, you're like, give me the battle.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pirate ship, really. So I love, you know, I love all the aspects of culinary in general. So I really fell in love with it. But then also when I was 14 years old, I had a small stint in foster care. And I just didn't, you know, I didn't get school. I didn't get friends. I had a hard time really understanding my purpose. But I went and worked at a restaurant, McCormick and Schmick's Seafood and Steakhouse. Oh, yeah. I worked for free at 14 years old. I just said, I'll just do prep work, anything. I would go there and, you know, they would treat you like an adult. They would get mad at you for showing up 5 minutes late, and that wasn't something that existed in my world, because really my teachers at the time, my parents at the time, nobody cared if I showed up 10 minutes early or 4 hours late. Like, I really kind of just did whatever. So the structure was so enticing to me. It was very similar to why I think a lot of young people go to the military. You know, mm-hmm. They want that structure, they want that learning ability over, like, with a lot of people who know more than them. And so that was really exciting to me. And so I stepped into the kitchen at 14 and I never stepped out.
Wow. Okay, so let's get an overview of your restaurant. Then I want to go back to your origin story, because there's some meat on that bone, I think, that would be really informative for entrepreneurs and for maybe parents and young people that could be listening, and, you know, how they might approach going after their dream and attacking it in such a strong way. So what is the name? Tell me about your business.
Okay. Name is Omakase Por Favor. We are a coastal Mexican Japanese fusion fine dining establishment, but we're really approachable. I want to bring the tasting menu, the Michelin style dining experience to any budget and any person. And I want to take the stuffiness out of food, and I want to bring different cultural flavors to, you know, the suburbia areas that I don't feel get as enough access to those things.
Okay, so omakase and por favor, what do those words mean?
So omakase means trust the chef. It's a
Japanese
word.
Okay.
And por favor means please. So the restaurant's name is Trust the Chef, Please. And that's the idea, is that go there, relax, trust the chef, don't worry about a thing.
Okay, so I haven't been in there. It's in Lincoln,
mm-hmm.
Lincoln, California. Yep. If anybody listening here, there's a small town in Placer County that has got, actually, you guys are a fast growing town. And I think you're getting ready to open up a second restaurant, you mentioned, in Sacramento.
Midtown Sacramento.
Okay, so you're going for number two. Well, tell me about how you came to decide Japanese and Mexican mix. That really seems uncommon. I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
Yeah, well, I went to Mexico right out of high school. I worked for an awesome chef down there in Manzanillo, and I studied, you know, coastal Mexican food. And I realized really quickly everything that I had known about Mexican food wasn't truly accurate, because I had thought of Mexican food as tacos, burritos, nachos.
It's not.
I mean, that's a small portion of it. Now, I mean, if you go to, you know, maybe Tijuana or Mexican restaurants, you'll find that stuff. But Mexico is a huge country with a lot of diversity, especially coastal living. I mean, you get an access to so many different flavors, including oysters, ceviche, aguachiles, tostadas, all these things that are so amazing that are really underrepresented in suburban areas. Now, in Los Angeles and city, you'll be able to find them easier. But around, you know, Placer County, you're not going to
so
find much. Them.
Yeah, so my wife and I were talking the other day. So we go to Cabo a lot. And yeah. So they've got really good restaurants there and great, authentic Mexican food and a mixture of other stuff. But what around here is like a great Mexican restaurant? I live in the Placer County area and, you know, we're trying to think of one. And I want one with a full bar, because I want to go in there and get some tequila, maybe a margarita. Yeah,
I'm here for that.
And like, we couldn't think of one.
Yeah.
And you're building something like that in Sacramento, it sounds like.
Yeah, so Sacramento will have a full bar. Lincoln, the only reason we don't is because it's so difficult to get a liquor license. Okay. But, you know, hopefully, the amount of red tape around restaurants and how hard it is to open, especially in a place like Placer County, is really insane. When you start, I mean, I started this project 3 years ago. I only opened my restaurant 8 months ago.
Okay.
So it took 2 years to actually open.
Oh, that's amazing. So where in Lincoln are you? What, describe the location.
Mm-hmm. Right, if you go down 65, we're right off 12 Bridges, across from high school, same parking lot as Leatherby's.
That's pretty close to here, yeah.
Oh, it's super close. It's a great location because we can look at the casino. So we get a ton of people from the Bay Area.
Thunder Valley, yes.
So Bay Area, Sacramento, coming out to a comedy show or a concert or just have a night of gambling, you know, we're a great option to stop by. So, and, you know, I really think of, and I think this is maybe a unpopular opinion with some people, but culinary wasteland is what I would describe this area, you know, in some aspect. There's not a lot of different stuff. There's not a lot of really fresh flavors, which doesn't make any sense to me because we are in the farm to fork capital. I mean, there are farms and amazing farmers everywhere, but it's so hard to go to a restaurant and find like a really good dish that's comprised of food that was made here.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so tell me about what is so different. So, Japanese and Mexican, a lot of authenticity, it sounds like.
Yeah, but not really. I mean, really, I try to go careful about saying anything's authentic because, you know, I'm not Mexican and I'm not Japanese. I respect the cultures and the food very much, but really, I want to pull the culture and the ideas behind coastal Mexican, which is huge flavors, fresh fish, you know, a really easy lifestyle and way of eating, and then present it in something that you would see at a Japanese izakaya bar or a Japanese sushi bar, because everyone can understand going to a sushi bar, getting, you know, 6 or 7 small pieces of fresh fish and paying a premium for it. So I'm bringing that thought process, but we're using Mexican flavors.
So our favorite restaurants in our family, you know, we haven't tried yours yet.
Yeah,
so we go to Bennett's a lot. That's just my favorite. They've got good margaritas and they've got good burgers and salmon. So they do have some good fish. But my kids, they really like sushi. So they really like to go to Makuni's. Mm-hmm. They happen to be right next door to each other in Roseville. And so they're kind of convenient and, you know, we love it. But how would you contrast your location with those type of locations?
Yeah, nothing like it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, nothing like it, because, you know, when you're going to Bennett's, you're getting American Eats.
Okay.
So you're getting stuff that you've seen before that you can recognize, you know, your maybe poke nachos or sandwiches or, you know.
They've got a little bit of poke, and they do have a little bit of a Mexican menu too.
Sure.
Fish tacos and
stuff. That's kind of what every menu has. I think Bennett's does it pretty good.
Yeah.
But you can find that very similar menu at maybe Gooseport right next to yours. You know,
Gooseport,
you can find
downtown,
a very similar
Roseville.
Menu to that even at a local Applebee's.
Okay.
Although I'd say Bennett's is much more upscale and very nice.
But I would say that too, yeah.
I also love the owner of Bennett's. I think they're a great company. Right, but that's very, it's American cuisine, which American cuisine is a melting pot. So you're going to get a little bit of pokey, a little bit of Mexican food.
Okay, gotcha.
And then you've got Makuni's, which is a sushi bar. You're getting sushi, you're getting, you know, hand rolls, things like that. I don't have either of those things.
Oh, you don't?
Nope.
Okay.
I don't have sushi. I don't have tacos.
What do you
I
have
don't...
this Japanese that's there? What's the Japanese part?
So the Japanese part is we pull flavors You know, we work with ponzu's, we work with Japanese ingredients, but I really wouldn't put any of my cuisine in one of those boxes because we're doing inventive imaginate. Like, we're doing a salmon carpaccio with fresh wasabi and a salsa verde.
Okay.
I mean, you wouldn't find that either places. We're doing
very unique stuff.
Very, very unique stuff. And I think the closest that I could compare it to would be like Localis.
Okay, what's that?
Localis is a one Michelin star restaurant in Sacramento, and they do, I think it's like 12 course tasting menu.
Okay.
And it's whatever the chef wants, and he's very inventive, and he's plain, like it's driven by the ingredients that he has around him and by the seasons, and you know, it doesn't conform really. Sometimes he does pasta, sometimes he does Asian stuff. So it's a chef-driven restaurant. It's not a culinary, you know, we, and also when you go in there, it all will make more sense, but the chef is as close as we are now.
Oh, you're really close to the chef. So it's kind of an experience when you go in. It's not necessarily you, the chef.
No, I mean, it's whoever mostly, the chef is. I'm going there after this.
Okay. So you work in the Lincoln, I was going to say office, restaurant, and you act as the chef for the night. Now, do you make the same thing every night?
Or no, the menu changes every week.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to go in and check it out.
I'm going to have to go in there. Yeah, I'm really excited about it now. My wife, we both love foods, and so it should be a good experience.
It's an experience, and it's not an experience you can get anywhere else but like a Michelin star tasting menu, and I'm trying to bring that so it is something that people can experience more often. Okay. I want, you know, it to be a regular Tuesday and someone be like, let's go have that level of dining. And I think it starts with our service is like excellent. Our front of house staff and our the way that we interact with the customers is a very high standard.
Okay.
I mean, we don't let the waters empty. We explain everything like it's an educational journey. We're talking about where this piece of lettuce came from and why it's special.
Oh, wow. You're learning about food. So it is kind of almost like for the food connoisseur, the foodie type person. Very intriguing. So each night, how many different choices would we have on the menu?
So our a la carte menu has about 12 options plus oysters. So that doesn't really change too much. I mean, there's some rotating options. Those are our base dishes. But the omakase is a 6-course tasting menu. And you don't really get to see a menu. You just say omakase and we give you 6 courses. You can say, hey, I don't want any raw fish, or I'm vegan, or I'm gluten-free, or I love mushrooms, and maybe we'll go in the back, find a mushroom, and cook a new dish for you. But it's very customized, but it's just changes every day.
And it's dinner only, though?
Nope, lunch too.
Oh, lunch. Oh, you guys do lunch too. Okay.
Yeah, because it's also such a healthy option. You know, we're working with really fresh fish, and we're working with amazing garden vegetables, so I wanted to be open for lunch. Not because it's necessarily a moneymaker, but I wanted people to have access to like a really healthy, fulfilling lunch.
Okay, so now is this a place we go? We're going to dress up? Are we going to be casual? Is it expensive? It sounds expensive.
You could wear flip-flops and a t-shirt, or you can wear a prom dress. It really fits both. And it's once you get in there, you realize because it looks fancy, but it feels so homey. Okay. And when you get in there, I mean, I think that it's so easy to get comfortable. Like it feels like you're walking into somebody's home. So depending on the occasion, you could wear anything. And then if you had money to spend, you could do the 6-course tasting menu with the wine pairing plus some caviar, and you'd be like $125 a person. But if you didn't have money to spend, you could come in and get some oysters and a tostada and leave for 30.
Okay.
So it really is a way to give that kind of experience to all types of budgets and all types of walks of life.
Okay, you're opening up a second restaurant. And so why open up the second restaurant when you just got the first one going? This sounds like incredible drive.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm only going to be so young and have this much energy for so long. So, you know, you got to build the empire as fast as possible. So I believe in riding the wave and not waiting. And when an opportunity opens, my ear is here and ready to listen and see if it's something I could fit into.
Interesting. So you say riding the wave. What is the state of the consumer now in terms of going out to dinner and going out to lunch?
Right now it's good.
Okay.
Right now it's great, which it wasn't 2 years ago. So I think that timing-wise, it's working out for us. I also think in this area specifically, people are getting bored of the same things. They're getting bored of, like, you know, burgers and wings. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I think people are more open. I couldn't have opened this restaurant in Lincoln, you know, even 4 years ago, I don't think they would be ready for the experience, the culinary journey. I mean, it is a lot. There's education involved. And educating the consumer is like 80% of the battle. And I think that right now people are ready for it more than ever. And I think that especially now moving to Midtown, you know, there are so many, like, there's the struggling artist down there. There's the businessman. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of consumers that want to be treated awesome and have a great dining experience but can't afford it. So we come in here and we can do that for people, and that's really exciting.
I think it'll do really well. I'm sounds like you're doing great in Lincoln, but I could picture Midtown really being a great place for something so uncommon. Where yeah. Lincoln, it's hard to picture something so unusual or uncommon in Lincoln for me. It sounds very high. It sounds like it should be in Sacramento.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have a lot of people traveling from Sacramento wow. on a weekly basis to come eat at our restaurant because they don't think there's anything like it even in Sacramento. And so that's really special, and I'm really excited about that. And and we have awesome customers. I mean, every single person that walks in, I feel like even if they walk in confused and, you know, with their guard up because nobody wants to feel like they don't know what's going on, I think they leave like almost a better person because they're like, wow, this is really inspiring.
Wow, that does, it, I'm inspired for sure. And so I got to check it out. What about dessert? I keep asking about the food because I think I'm curious what a chef might make for dessert.
Well, so in the Lincoln space, we're across the street from Leatherby's, which is a very well-known ice cream establishment. So I was like, okay, how are we going to beat the biggest, you know, yummiest ice cream sundaes? They're right. Why wouldn't you just go get a sundae afterwards? And my thought went straight to the experience and pyrotechnics and how do we make this cool? So we have this fire pit we bring out and you roast your own s'mores table side, but it's really elegant, really cool. And we change the s'more depending on what we're getting seasonally. So right now we're getting plums from this little adorable farm in Lincoln. We got these big, beautiful plums. So we made a sugar plum cookie dough s'more.
Oh, wow.
And you roast it tableside. And alongside that, we're working with Valiant Coffee and we have more fire if you want to add it. So we have a tableside siphon pot coffee. You know, you get a flame, you get this whole science experience. So if you're doing the s'mores in the coffee pot, I mean, I watch people end their night with that. Like two people last night had an anniversary and their eyes were just clean. They were like, we're in Lincoln, this is amazing. They were just like, look at this, taking pictures of everything. I mean, you don't see people have that type of experience here that often, and they were so happy.
Do you have room for events, or is it what's like a big crowd, or excuse me, how many people can you hold?
So we've had somebody buy the place out and we did 50.
Yeah, okay.
But it's a small intimate space, like parties of 20 are like pretty the biggest we can go either at the bar there. It's small. It's
because my family's like 15 people. I was thinking like of doing like a family dinner or something like that because all my grandkids would love that experience. Yeah. Okay, so that one holds about 50, so I could get a table for a couple tables together if we can get 15 people in there.
Well, and we only have 5 tables and it's almost all bar.
Oh.
So yeah, perfect. Yeah. If you come in, but I've done 23 people around the bar and they all just laughed and they were, you know, almost like, cause the chefs are in the center.
Okay.
So, you know, it's pretty cool. So there's a lot of different ways to do
it. Okay. And then what's Sacramento going to look like? And when will that one open?
End of October is when we're looking to open. Okay. And it's going to be very similar. We're going to really emphasize the raw bar aspect of it. Cause I think one thing I haven't even mentioned is we're a greaseless kitchen.
Okay.
No fryers, no ovens, no stoves.
Okay, so is that for health reasons or just...
It's for...
Your creative.
Yeah. It's not like I have a lot of money to open a restaurant, so by not adding a hood vent and an Ansel system, we're saving $400,000. So I said, okay, if I only have X amount of dollars to open a restaurant, what can I do to make it happen? I was like, don't do a fryer, don't do an oven, don't do a range. Mm-hmm. Can you still do it? And we have, you know, basically... The size of this little couch setup is the size of our kitchen. And we feed a ton of people out of it. And we're super creative. We work with fermentation. We work with ceviche-ing and curing and all these cool ways that you wouldn't even know we don't have a kitchen, but we don't.
Interesting. Okay, so Sacramento, I'm kind of thinking Sacramento too, because you're going to have the full liquor license mm-hmm. there. Why was it easier to get a liquor license in Sacramento than Placer County?
So Placer County had put a bill in place where there was only a certain amount of liquor license that could go out. It was put in place, I might be wrong, but it was like 20 years ago.
Okay.
And we haven't been able to like change it. So the liquor license ran out. And right now, every time like the ABC goes through there, okay, we're giving out this many liquor licenses this year, Placer County gives out zero. And so what ends up happening is there is not enough liquor license. So if you have one, you can sell it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to sell it, it's almost like a house at this point. So the last one sold for $380,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And I, you know,
and then Sacramento,
beer and sake.
Yeah.
And wine.
Now in Sacramento, it's different, though. Sacramento.
So they give out 25 a year, and they're about $16,000. And then if you want to buy one, all right, because they're not as uncommon, $60,000. And then,
okay,
boom, you
so
got
you
it.
Acquired one, so for sure you're going to have that in Sacramento.
We are waiting to do the lottery first, because the lottery comes out in August, and so we'll know by October. If we don't get that, then we'll buy one. But okay, we might as well wait to do the lottery, because we're, you know, saving $40,000.
Definitely.
So there's a lot of, you know, little red tape things that you have to do to not you spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars unnecessarily.
Good move. Yeah, scrappy. So in Sacramento, though, is it going to be about the same size, or will it be?
It's bigger.
Oh, okay.
But not that much bigger. We're still going to keep the intimate feel. It's, you know, it's going to be around 50 people still. But yeah, we're same concept, but different menu, because we're going to be using Sacramento produce and Sacramento fishermen instead of Lincoln produce and Lincoln fishermen.
Okay.
So a little different.
Is the name going to be the same?
Yes.
So same name. And then the longer term vision, you alluded to the idea that there'll be growth beyond the two.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I'm committed to like putting my head down and not looking up until 5 years from now and seeing what we can accomplish. I mean, I think that there is so much talent that I have in my vicinity of people who want to work with me. So as long as I have talented team that wants to work by my side, I will keep expanding.
Why do people want to be by your side? Not that I would work for you in a second, but why are there, what is it about people wanting to work with you that is, that you find is like the thing?
Well, I think that I have worked for so many horrible, horrible chefs that I've kind of really pieced together like who I want to be as a leader. And I think in this industry, it's slightly unique because this is such a toxic industry. I don't know if you know anything about the...
I've heard the stories. I'm invested in a couple of restaurants.
I mean,
and,
it gets bad.
Yeah.
It gets really ugly. I mean, and I really, from the beginning, wanted to do things differently. I wanted to make sure that the back house was treated, back house meaning kitchen staff, was treated in a way where they would get tips and they would make money and they would have a voice. And the I do a basically an ownership program where every single one of my employees has their own lane of something they're responsible for, whether it be just the mignonette or the s'mores of that week.
Wow.
Or I've got one server who's just responsible for the beer. And by implementing an ownership program, which was taught to me by Unreasonable Hospitality, which is an amazing culinary book, people have purpose. They're not just showing up to be bossed around. They've got visions and drive. And, you know, I think we also talk a ton about mental health in my kitchen, which is unheard of in any of the restaurants I talk about. You know, we talk about the window of tolerance and working at our best self and being in the green and all these things that...
What's being in the green, by the way?
So the window of tolerance, if you're in the red, you're oh, what do I do? What do I have to do? What do I have to do? Like not thinking clearly. Or if you're in the blue, you're, you know, catatonic, disassociating. And those are what happen really easily when you're working in a super stressful environment. So what do we have to do to keep you in the green where you're thinking the clearest? Is it drinking water? Is it taking a break? Do you just have to talk it out? I mean, when I was growing up in this industry, none of that was talked about, nor was it allowed. I almost got fired once for sighing.
Sighing? Oh, like a... Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it stuck with me. I thought sighing was bad. So then my next jobs as being a leader, I heard someone sigh and I'd say, hey, do you want to work here? Don't sigh. Because monkey see, monkey do. And
yeah,
so
now
it's just part of my identity is trying to learn and unlearn some of these really nasty things that you learn.
Well, some of that, so McCormick and Schmick, for those that don't know, that's at the Fountains in Roseville, was at the Fountains
in Roseville.
Yeah, now
it's
McCoonies. Now the McCoonies are in there.
Full circle.
But the service wasn't that great there, right?
No.
Yeah.
They were cooking out of microwaves.
It's got all the different stuff. It's like it was destined to be a great restaurant. The location's fantastic. Steak and, you know, full bar and everything. It's like, it just never felt great when you came out of there.
Mm-mm.
I'm surprised they let you work for free.
Yes.
At 14.
Well, they didn't know I was 14.
Oh, okay.
but, you know, I wouldn't be able to get away with it now.
Yeah.
But then you could. You could go in and say, hey, I'm trying to be a chef and I want to intern somewhere. Can I come in? And I was peeling carrots and doing shrimp, washing dishes. I mean, I was hanging out with pirates. I mean, I was 14 years old and I was hanging out with 23-year-old, like, kitchen guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Which shaped me so much now because I got treated like an adult from a young age. So I think I started my growth very young. And so now I feel like I'm a lot more mature mentally than maybe my age is. And I have that to blame for it because I was just hanging out with adults.
Well, let's talk about this for a sec. So we'll go back. I'm excited about your restaurant. I'll go in there. I think some of our audience is going to be like, I got to check this out. But really, we want to know what builds the kind of person that can do this at 28. Coming from a foster situation, you did not have an easy childhood. So where did all the drive and perseverance and everything, how did that, I don't know, manifest itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think adversary is one of the biggest tools in the world. And the quicker you can fail and mess up and do things wrong, the quicker you can learn in some cases. And so, you know, by 14, I was making... Yes, I was working in a restaurant, but I was skipping school. I was making all the mistakes. I was doing such crazy amount of things while my parents were going through a divorce. And because of that divorce, they were both kind of in this custody battle that ended up us going into foster care because they couldn't get it together. And, you know, in all of that stuff, I just... You know, I didn't necessarily act the best. I was a crazy kid growing up way too fast. And I think what ended up happening was that my independence, I didn't realize how big of a tool that was because by the time I was 18 and everyone else was 18, I was already paying for rent. I was already buying groceries. I was already driving myself around, making my own decisions. And I looked around and a lot of my peers were not doing that yet. Mm-hmm. They weren't even getting close to doing that. And so it's isolating on one hand, but I think isolation is also a great thing in this industry because I was already kind of isolated from a lot of my friends. So I said, all right, I'm just going to continue down this path. I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to keep my head down. And, you know, I think you miss out on a lot of, you know, maybe fun stuff that other people would deem fun. But to me, like the drive of being something and creating something and trying different things has pushed me more than, you know, anything. And so
any mistakes you regret?
You know, I can't say anything that I would regret because I'm here right now and I'm stoked where I'm at. Now, I put really unreasonable goals. So when I was 18 years old, I wanted to be the youngest chef to ever get a James Beard Award. The youngest chef to ever get a James Beard Award is now 24, so I'm definitely not going to hit that target. But I would set such I wanted to open up a restaurant by the time I was 25.
Why do you think people don't set such high goals?
I think they're scared of failing. But one thing that I love about my childhood and my family life is that I was surrounded by failures in a positive way. I mean, between my sister, my mom, my dad, me, I mean, we all were just such losers at some points and we messed things up and we failed. But even after the whole foster care thing, you know, my business partner is my dad.
Now your business partner is your dad?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So he's a mechanical engineer. So he's helping with the build out and all this stuff. So, you know, nobody in my family, we're all such sarcastic kind of people, let the failures be a problem. It didn't, you know, we let it go. I got a tattoo when I was 14 years old. I know, on a kitchen table somewhere that said, forgive and forget. And I really, really live by that. It's like, you know, people are going to do things. Things aren't going to go well. Forgive it. Move on. Keep going. And if you don't let that stuff, you know, get you down, then I feel like the whole world opens up. And I still have unreasonable goals. I mean, I want to get a Michelin star in Lincoln. I feel like that is such an unreasonable goal. But I mean, what's the worst that could happen if I go for that?
Oh, that sounds awesome. So that's one big goal. So how do you go about setting these goals? Are you just, is there something that you look to aspire to?
I mean, I think that one thing I was always looking for was like a mentor or something, because I have this like crazy mind where I'm like, I'm going to open a knife company and a streetwear brand and I do a podcast and I'm going to open a restaurant. That's just kind of like the way my brain works. So I always wanted like a mentor or something that could like quiet that down and help me focus. And then I had tried and tried to find somebody that had that mindset. And then I finally met somebody who, in my opinion, was similar, but they would never have time to mentor anyone because they were go, go, going. And then I was like, you know what? This is just a lonely path of, you know, excellence trying to achieve. And so I wake up in the morning and I come up with an idea and I try to do it. And I think that's part of the beauty of being so young, is I maybe am still naive.
I can tell that you have this culture that's really attractive within the business. Then you've got your dad. Is there anybody else that sort of is like the, I'll call it the workplace soulmate, where that's like your confidant that you can tell anything to?
Oh, my whole team.
Okay.
My whole team. I mean, it is like, I don't have the burden of having to hold things in that much, because everyone who, it's such an open book there. I tell people to come to me if they have problems. I go to them if I have problems. I mean, the trust that needs to be built in a kitchen to thrive is really important. So it takes a long time to people get added in that circle. But I was talking to my CDC about, you know, mental health stuff, about, oh man, you know, I'm...
What's CDC?
Oh, Chef de Cuisine.
Okay.
Yeah, about mental health stuff and about how, you know, maybe sometimes I want to cry because I feel like I'm not doing a good job. And that's an open conversation. And I think that having that conversation out in the open, it makes you a better leader. It makes you more vulnerable. More people are allowed to come in and say, hey, Chef, I feel like I had a really bad day today. I don't know why, what got into me, you know, and the change of work environment at a restaurant where people are able to be themselves is huge. Now, you're not allowed to be 5 minutes late. There's a big difference. If you're not 5 minutes early, you're 20 minutes late. But yeah, we've really created this cool culture. And that's another reason why I'm excited to expand, because I feel like there's other people in the restaurant industry that would thrive in this style of environment.
What scares you?
Money. Okay. Losing money, yeah. Trusting people, because now I've gotten to a point where, you know, I'm juggling two restaurants, and so I have to budget. I've got to make sure my bookkeeping's right. I got to make sure people get paid. There's a lot of stuff that I am now going and asking people, hey, what do you think about this? And so I'm scared of bad advice, so I tread really lightly. I never take anyone, you know, at their first word, maybe their second or their third, you know, but I'm not scared of failure, so that's helpful. Yeah, I'm not really scared of judgment either. I've been in such weird situations to be judged so difficult, like so hard, that now I feel like my skin is so thick.
Wow. Super, super proud of what you've done. Did you grow up here in the Sacramento region?
Yeah, so I grew up in Roseville.
Oh, you did?
Yep, I went to Roseville High. And the second I graduated, I left. I was out. I wasn't going to come back. I went to Mexico. I went to Napa. I went to LA. I went to Washington. I traveled to, you know, Korea, China, Japan. And the last place that I worked in Washington, the chef just beat me down. I mean, my feet were literally bloody. I was like thin as bones. I was working, you know, 100 hours a week for somebody else's dream. And then it was really apparent how disposable I was, even though I was the backbone of the entire establishment. And I just felt like I didn't think I'd have enough energy to keep doing this for other people, because it would be, you know, that would be the third restaurant that I would make extremely successful for somebody else. And so I was like, I'm done. I can't do this for anyone else. So I called up my dad, said, Dad, I'm moving home. I know I haven't been back in a while, but I want to open a restaurant there. And he's like, all right, cool.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So just last question. Well, maybe I should ask you, is there anything I did not ask you that we should make sure that, the information we should get out there?
No, I mean, I think that if anybody is nervous about coming to Omakase Por Favor, one, because they don't like seafood, or because they think it might be too fancy, or all these things, like, if you come in with an open mind and let us know your concerns, like, I think there's something for everyone there, and that I urge people to come check it out, even if they're nervous or scared.
Okay, so what would you urge young people to do now, or parents? Any words of wisdom for those people that think they might have, you know, they've got an idea, they've got a dream, and, you know, they're They do have that fear. Maybe they didn't have the same toughness as what you developed over the years.
Yeah. Well, I think I always fall back on my discipline. I had to teach myself discipline, which is harder to do than somebody else teaching it. But, you know, even on the days where you don't feel good or you don't feel confident or maybe, you know, you had a big loss or something's not right, you know, go back to your discipline. Wake up in the morning, make your bed, put your clothes on, be at work on time. Like, don't let that waver, because it will push you through whatever you're going through. And I really believe that a lot of people tend to get beat down and then they stay in bed till noon and they don't put their clothes on, they don't make their bed, and they get out of habit, and then it's really hard to get back. Just because you're going through a lull, you got to keep the discipline, you know, especially if you're young, especially if you're young. I know too many people who spend half their day in bed. We're young, like there's so much we can accomplish. So keep the discipline, wake up early, make the most out of your day.
I love it. Chef Jenna Pekka, and your business name is
Omakase Por Favor.
Omakase Por Favor. I love it. Thank you for coming on the show. You're a real inspiration.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Yeah. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.